Welcome to Chapter 12, The Imperfect Verbs. In Chapter 3, we introduced the present active indicative verb, and then we followed up by the middle passive verbs a few chapters later. Now we're ready to tackle the imperfect verbs. This will move us more toward the past tense, and we'll have to discuss tense, action start, and aspect as ways of looking at this verb as well. And with the present and future, we notice that they both use the primary endings, the o, ace, a, amen, ete, usi endings. And now we're into the secondary endings, which will do us a lot of good as we move into the aorist tense and then later on to the pluperfect. So after this chapter, we'll have all the endings for the Greek verbs down, primary endings and secondary endings. The reason why the imperfect was chosen to go first is because the imperfect is built off the present stem. And so the imperfect and present share the same stem form, and that's why we cover the imperfect first, even though it's used less frequently than the aorist. Well, let's jump into the imperfect verb, and we'll start off by going back and reviewing a wrap on the Lord's Prayer. Let's begin by reviewing the Lord's Prayer. Say it with me. Pater heimon ha en tois uranois hagias theto ta anima su. Altheto he basileia su genetheto ta thelema su. And one more time. Pater heimon ha en tois uranois hagias theto ta anima su. Altheto he basileia su genetheto ta thelema su. All right, that's getting easier and easier every time we do it. Traditionally, when the imperfect tense is introduced, we start in English with, for example, the present tense, they walk on Mount Jefferson. Or, they are walking on Mount Jefferson, using a more durative way of doing that. And then as you move to the past in English, we go, they walked on Mount Jefferson, something they did in the past. They walked. If we want to move to a more durative kind of thing in reference to the past, we would say, they were walking on Mount Jefferson. And this, they were walking on Mount Jefferson, is how we'll handle the imperfect tense for this course. Notice we use the is verb, were, plus a participle, actually, walking on Mount Jefferson. So you basically got a is verb plus a participle, gives you a more durative action, and that fits with how we're going to take the imperfect, as opposed to they walked on Mount Jefferson, which would be a simple aorist. Just to give you a sense of how frequently these various tense forms are used, the present tense form is used 5,534 times in the indicative. The aorist is also used in the 5,877 times, so the present and the aorist about equal in terms of usage. The aorist is the most frequent by about 300 forms. The imperfect, on the other hand, is only used about 1,682 times, and the future about 1,608. So the future and the imperfect, both about 1,600, and the imperfect will be built off the present tense. The perfects, on the other hand, are used about 837 times, so they're way down under 1,000, and the pluperfect only about 87 times. So this is just to give you a sense. The big tense forms, then, it should be clear, are the present tense forms and the aorist tense forms, both used over 5,500 times each, the aorist being about 300 times more than the present. The imperfect and future, both about 1,600, and the perfect down below 1,000, and the pluperfect less than 100 times. So just to get a sense of relative importance and frequency of how these tense forms are used in the New Testament. Now let's try to understand the imperfect in Greek. As far as the relationship to time goes, it's usually translated as something that's past. However, that's not always true, as we saw with the present tense, being able to be translated past, present, or future, for that matter. So the imperfect tense can sometimes be translated present, for example, in conditionals and things. Now, the action sart of the imperfect is more inceptive. Something's beginning to happen, and they can use the imperfect. Customary, this is the way it usually has happened in the past. Iterative, happening over and over again. Sometimes even instantaneous, which is going to match almost exactly the aorist tense, that something happened instantaneously. Or progressive. We're going to stress more the progressive, customary, iterative type of approach in our translation. Now that's the action sart, or how the action of the verb actually takes place. Similarly, we can look at it through the prism of aspect, that is, how the author is portraying an action, not how it actually happened in history, but how the author is portraying it. The imperfect will give us a view inside the event, similar to the present tense. There'll be immediacy. The particulars will be noticed. We're kind of in the parade, having just watched it gone past us a little bit. Point will be that in the process. So aspect of the imperfect will be immediacy, particulars, happening, and process. Now for translation, as we said before, we'll simply use the was or were verb plus a participle of the verb. So were walking, were jumping, were driving, that kind of thing. So, for example, they were standing on Mount Jefferson. The were standing is a translation of how we will take the imperfect tense at this point. But also realizing that there are various ways to translate this imperfect tense to pick up the various immediacy, happening, process types of things. And the contextual indicators, again, those little prepositions and adverbs, will indicate when the action of the verb actually is taking place, more so than just the imperfect tense forms that are tagged onto the verb itself. Another factor that we need to take into account with this imperfect tense and working with tense and time and things is the actual usage with particular verbs. Particular verbs will favor one way of expression over another. So you've got to keep track of not only the little pointers in the text, adverbs, conjunctions, and things like that, but also the verb that's being used itself. And so certain verbs will favor one over the other. It's just a matter of idiom and expression. Okay, how are these imperfect forms actually built? Well, we're going to start with the formula and augment on the front of it the present stem, which is why we're studying it now, because it does use the present stem that we're already used to, and then a CV, a connecting vowel, and then the ending. An example of that is the augment e, epsilon, is added onto the front of our favorite verb lu, for luo, that we've already used, the lambda upsilon. The connecting vowel is an omicron, and then the nu is added on the end, so it's eluon. And that's the imperfect form, meaning I was loosing. Now the connecting vowel is an omicron when it comes before mu and nu. The connecting vowel is an epsilon when it comes before anything else. Now the imperfect tense forms here will take what are called secondary endings. These secondary endings are present in the imperfect, the aorist, and the pluperfect. And so it's kind of nice because you learn the secondary endings and they work for you in the aorist, which is used overwhelmingly, and the pluperfect, which is rather rare. The primary endings that we've already learned work for, as we've seen, the present tense and the future, and they'll also be used in the perfect tense. So we have the primary and secondary endings, and these are basically the endings that we'll be using for the indicative verb for all our tenses. So once we're done this chapter, we've got basically the endings down for all of them. Slight modifications in some, but largely we'll have it. We're now ready to look at the imperfect active indicative of luo. These will take endings, similar to the present and future tenses, only these will be secondary endings, the NSM end to N, but you'll notice that there's an augment on the front of LUO, the epsilon, following consistently all the way through. So the augment on a present tense stem tells you that this is the imperfect. For the singular, we have eluan, I was loosing. Elues, you were loosing. And elue, he, she, it was loosing. Elue has the movable noun on it. For the plural, we have eluamen, we were loosing. Notice how the accent shifted back one because the antepenult moved to the upsilon. Eluete, you plural were loosing, and eluan, they were loosing. And you'll notice immediately, eluan, they were loosing, and eluan, I was loosing, are exactly the same form, and context will have to separate whether it's I or they, usually fairly easily distinguished, but the forms are exactly the same. So the secondary endings we need to keep our eyes on are going to be the nu, the sigma, the epsilon, which is actually a connecting vowel, but that's what we'll learn as an ending, and then the men, te, en. Or we could say it like this. The endings are nsa, men, te, en. We'll actually have a chant for this one, so don't worry about it right now. Next, we have the imperfect middle passive of LUO. Do you remember all the discussion on the middle before about being participatory action of the subject for the benefit of the subject? We'll be translating these here passive, but just be aware of the middle as well. They're exactly the same form, similar to what we had in the present tense when we had the present middle passive. So for the singular form, we have eluamen. I was being loosed. Was being loosed taken in a passive sense, something that happened to the subject of the sentence, I. I was being loosed. Elu'u is you were being loosed. Elu'ata is he, she, it was being loosed. For the plural, we have eluametha, we were being loosed. Second person, eluesthe, you plural were being loosed. And then third plural, eluanta, they were being loosed. So these are the imperfect middle passives. And you can say the endings like amen u eta, ametha estha anta. And we'll be catching this next in a chant, which will simplify the imperfect forms for us and also help us remember it. The middle translation would be, I was loosing for myself, you were loosing for yourself. Or, almost active, just stressing the participation of the subject in the action of the verb. Here is chant number 8, the imperfect forms, eluan, nsa, men to en. Let's try that again. The active form is eluan, nsa, men to en. The middle passive imperfect is eluamen, amen u eta, ametha estha anta. And the middle imperfect again is eluamen, amen u eta, ametha estha anta. Putting the active and the middle passive together into one single chant, we have eluan, nsa, men to en. Eluamen, amen u eta, ametha estha anta. And one final time, say it with me. Eluan, nsa, men to en. Eluamen, Amen u eta amatha estha anta. And that's the chant for the active middle passive of the imperfect. These, then, are the secondary endings which will be activated also with the aorist and the pluperfect tenses. Let's look at four ways that the augment is added. As we've seen before a consonant, the augment is consistently the epsilon. So, before a consonant, no problem. Just stick an epsilon on the front. That's how you augment. For the vowel, it's a little more complicated because you're adding an epsilon, and when the epsilon hits with the other vowels, it does kind of these gymnastics. And I want to just simplify that into four different moves that the epsilon makes here. When the epsilon is augmented on an alpha, epsilon, or omicron verb form, it simply lengthens that vowel. So, for example, epsilon plus alpha goes to an eta. An epsilon plus an epsilon also goes to an eta, and the epsilon plus an omicron goes to an omega. So basically the forms lengthen for the alpha, epsilon, and omicron. We kind of would expect that, though. Now, that the vowels that stay strong and stay themselves are iota, upsilon, eta, and omega remain unchanged. So the epsilon, when you add the epsilon in the front, it kind of gets eaten up by these vowels. Iota, upsilon, eta, and omega. So, for example, epsilon plus iota simply remains an iota. The epsilon plus the eta simply remains the eta. The epsilon-upsilon combination reduces to an upsilon. So the iota, upsilon, eta, omega simply stay themselves, and the epsilon is simply bounced off these stronger vowels here. Now, the diphthongs do their own thing, but the diphthongs follow a fairly regular pattern. You have the subscripting diphthongs. So, for example, the epsilon is added onto A, epsilon iota, it becomes an eta with an iota subscript. Similarly, the epsilon iota diphthong becomes an eta with an iota subscript, and the epsilon plus oi diphthong becomes an omega with an iota subscript. You'll kind of notice the similarity between these subscripting diphthongs and the alpha, epsilon, omicron that lengthen in our first way of looking at the vowels. Then there are diphthongs that simply lengthen. You have the epsilon added to the au, alpha, upsilon diphthong, and it becomes eta, upsilon. Similarly, you have epsilon added to the u diphthong, and it becomes the eta, upsilon. So basically, they keep on the au and u forms, they keep the upsilon, but they lengthen the first vowel, which is what we'd expect from our first rule under the vowels there. The alpha goes long and the epsilon goes long. So the diphthongs are fairly consistent with what we'd expect. Don't obsess over these. I don't want you to memorize this, but I do just want you to be aware of the kind of the gymnastics that some of these vowels will go through when the epsilon augment is added on the front. Largely, it lengthens them. Some of them stay strong and swallow. And the diphthongs subscript, if it's got an iota at the end, if it's got an upsilon at the end, basically the vowels just go long as we would expect. So no big deal, but just be aware of this is what's happening when an augment is added onto a verb that starts with a vowel. This will be similar when we get to the aorist tense also. They will also use an augment, so the same process will be used. No big deal, but just keep these things in mind. A third and fourth way to add the augment, and these are rather simple, is when there's a preposition on the front of a verb that we've seen is quite frequent. The augment is added between the preposition and the root verb. So, for example, you've got ekbalo, to cast out, ekbalo, to throw out. When you add the augment for the imperfect, it becomes ex ebalon. And so you see the epsilon gets added between the ek. When the epsilon is added, the kappa goes to xi, as we've seen before with the prepositions, so it's ex abalan. And so the augment just inserts itself between the preposition and the stem verb, which is what you'd expect. The augment with a preposition with a final vowel, however, and so the final vowel of the preposition will be dropped out and the epsilon will be inserted. So, for example, you've got apakteno, I die, and then it becomes apektenon, I was dying. And you'll notice the omicron of the apa drops out and the epsilon gets inserted in its place. So it's apek rather than apa. So the epsilon's inserted, the omicron is dropped out. So these are some ways that the augment is added onto the front of verbs. We'll see the same thing and the same processes will be used when we get to the aorist. Now here are a few examples of the augment being added onto verbs that you're already familiar with. The epsilon plus alpha combination going to an eta, lengthening, is akuo. When the epsilon is added, becomes akuan. And so you see the epsilon and the alpha go to an eta, akuan. A second example is the epsilon being added to an epsilon initial verb, like egero, I rise, becomes an eta also. So it's egero, add the epsilon onto the front, becomes egeron. And so it becomes an eta, egeron. A third example of the epsilon being added to an omicron lengthening, going to an omega, is with the verb or ke'amai, which means I was dancing. And it becomes orkumain. And so you see the omicron goes up to an omega. With the diphthongs, you've got the epsilon added to the I, alpha iota diphthong, becomes an eta iota subscripted. So the verb iro, I take up, becomes aron, with a eta iota subscript on the aron. Epsilon with oi becomes omega iota subscript, and we get that with oikodomeo, and it becomes okodamun, I was building. Again, I don't want you to memorize all these transformations, but just be aware when you see them, you'll have a little bit of knowledge of how to deconstruct them and anticipate what they should be, so there won't be any surprises. Well, here's our ninth chant with the imperfect of Ami. We've already learned Ami aesten, esmen este aesen, earlier for the present tense, and now for the imperfect. This will be our last Ami chant, and Ami in the imperfect is used as a simple was verb usually. So now we have I am and I was, and that'll be the two tenses that Ami is largely used in. We also saw that there was a future of Ami, but that's fairly easy to recognize, so we didn't chant that one. But we will chant this one because this one is used very frequently. And the chant goes, Amen, ace, ain, amen, eta, asan. Amen means I was. Ace means you were. Ain means he, she, it was. In the plural, amen means we were. Eta means you plural were. And asan means they were. So the chant once again, say it with me. Amen, ace, ain. Amen, eta, asan. And one final time. Amen, ace, ain. Amen, eta, asan. And this is an imperfect Ami. There is no aorist, which will be used with the past tense largely. Here are a couple examples of how the imperfect is actually translated in some texts. Ekenas de elegen peri tu nau tu somatas autu. But that one, ekenos, the de is postpositive, so we pull that out front. But that one, elegen, was speaking. There's our imperfect. He was speaking, elegen. Peri tu nau, concerning the temple, tu somatas autu, of his body. Autu is his, somatas, his body. A second example is seen in kai erkanta prasautan. And erkanta is our imperfect, third person plural, so it's they were coming prasautan, to him. So you can see how the imperfect is actually translated. There will be many more examples of how to translate in the workbook, both in terms of shorter translation and examples of long translations. Now for the vocabulary of chapter 12. Our first word is apathnesko, and it means I die. The second word is ake, and it means there. Our third word is heos, and it means until. Our fourth word is idu, and it means behold. The fifth word is hina, and it means in order that or that. The sixth word is Ioannes, and it means John. The seventh word is men, and it means on the one hand or indeed. The eighth word is halos, aon, and it means whole or entire. The ninth word is hata, and it means when. And the tenth word is sun, and it means with.